Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, working to assure opportunities for successful employment for all people with disabilities. A skilled workforce for Florida's businesses. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. On the web at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
There's a new push to investigate the investigators in the case of Florida State quarterback Jameis Winston.
So probable cause is building, is present, is there. You have a rape kit, you have physical evidence, and he doesn't issue probable cause.
Also this week, Florida lawmakers are looking to unmake laws that no longer make sense. In a few cases, laws that never made sense.
It uses the term alien in it, but basically the outcome of the law is that people from Asia cannot own property.
We'll also find out who's likely to be the next president of the Florida Senate, look at an effort to teach high schoolers good money management, and find out why it's so important for ex-cons to have proper identification. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. We start this week's Capitol Report with a story that just doesn't seem to want to go away. The attorney for the woman who accused Florida State University quarterback Jameis Winston of sexual assault is criticizing the Tallahassee police investigation and asking Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi to look into the case. Patricia Carroll says police were more interested in her client than in quickly investigating the charges. She's upset a police investigator waited 9 months before getting a DNA sample from Winston.
So probable cause is building, is present, is there. You have a rape kit, you have physical evidence, and he doesn't issue probable cause to get a search warrant for Mr. Winston's DNA. Instead, he issues a search warrant into the victim's phone records.
Carroll stopped short of accusing TPD of misconduct, but did allege that case records provided to the media were incomplete. Carroll says records she received from the accuser's family appear more complete, adding that 7 of the 11 pages of one report are missing from the case files released this week to the media. Carroll also attacked the credibility of the two witnesses who say they saw Winston and the woman engaged in a sex act, and she called the statements provided by the two men patently false. Carroll says she wants Bondi to determine if there's a systemic problem with the Tallahassee Police Department. During a 90-minute talk with reporters in a Pasco County park, she said Tallahassee area state attorney Willie Meigs should have spent more than the 13 days he took to parse the facts in the case. Well, Stan, probably the first question I have is, why are we still talking about this?
Well, Patricia Carroll made a point of spending an hour and a half with the media this morning talking about what she feels was done wrong. And the main message here, Tom, I think is that everybody seems to be saying someone in this case is looking the other way at some point or another. Tim Jansen, Jameis Winston's lawyer, says, look, I'm not the morals police. Yes, he did something that's, you know, it's a one-night stand. It's something that college kids do. Patricia Carroll says she can't account for the changes in the accuser's testimony, but is willing to look past that to go with accusations. The TPD, well, why are they waiting to file a police report? Some say they're looking the other way because it's a police person. Winston and his accuser, why are you in a bar when you're underage? You're looking the other way on the law. Willie Meigs says also there are too many inconsistencies in the story. He doesn't interview Jameis Winston during the course of the investigation. People have questioned that. And the witnesses, the other football players, according to Patricia Carroll, they videotape the incident as it happens and then they leave and then allegedly they delete that video, which she says, look, videotaping it in the first place is a crime and then you're destroying evidence. And so the main message here I think is she wants to say there have been a lot of problems with the way this whole thing has gone on and she doesn't want to let it go just yet.
And she is appealing to Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi to intervene, to bring in the Florida Department of Law Enforcement and essentially reset.
And that's exactly right. And we heard on Friday afternoon through a statement from Pam Bondi's office that they have communicated with FDLE Commissioner Gerald Bailey. There has not, as of yet, been an official complaint filed. And so they have nothing to work on yet. It remains to be seen what will happen, if anything, when and if there is that official complaint.
And do we have a lot of, past experience of people going to the Florida Attorney General and saying, please revive an investigation that we believe was mishandled originally?
This seems to be a relatively rare thing, and it's a fairly high bar to clear. You would think that if the state attorney has determined there is not enough evidence to file charges, then how would that look if the state attorney general goes above and beyond and says, I'm going to do my own investigation? We should clarify that what Patricia Carroll wants is more an investigation of the Tallahassee Police Department's methods. She doesn't necessarily want to reopen the criminal case. She wants to know, is there a problem with the way TPD operates, and is there a way to look at whether they operate differently when they're looking at high-profile athletes as well, as some have questioned?
So we will find out once Gerald Bailey, the commissioner of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, makes a determination as to whether or not he believes there is, I guess, just cause to move forward with an investigation of the investigators on this.
That's right. And so then we don't know, we should say, even if there is an official complaint filed and Commissioner Bailey gets that complaint, he can then still have the binary choice of I do investigate or I don't investigate. And so the long and short of this is we're here again. We don't know if this is closed yet. We may know more in a couple days.
And we will also know if the person of interest in this entire matter is the winner of the Heisman Trophy come Monday.
That is absolutely true. And of course, people have speculated throughout this whole thing that the investigation transpired in a different way because you're dealing with a top-ranked football team and a front runner for the biggest award in college football. And Patricia Carroll stopped short of saying that the investigation was definitely done differently in her head because Jameis Winston and the football team were so prominent. But her words were interesting. She said she thought the, quote, politics of football, end quote, may have played a role in how the investigation transpired, and we'll let everybody else decide what they think that means.
Additional clarity to what is admittedly an incredibly murky situation provided by Florida Public Radio's Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks, Stan.
Thanks, Tom.
Come the month of March, the Florida Capitol will be filled with lawmakers bent on, as their title implies, making new laws. But at least one lawmaker wants to use the upcoming session as an opportunity for some statutory spring cleaning. As Ryan Bank reports, a bill repealing a ban on cohabitation in Florida may open a dialogue about the need to strip out-of-state legislation from the books.
This goes over here.
This where?
This goes over here.
Why?
Because it's cups.
Okay. There's cups over here, too, though.
Those are mugs.
Scott Chandler and Matilda Parker have been dating since their senior year in high school. They've been living together for a couple years now, and the couple says the reason for their living arrangement is a simple monetary calculation.
We found an apartment we could afford together, make it work, make it easier for her to do class without having to worry about paying for tuition and room and board and food. And everything like that.
It just make financial sense to move in together.
But according to Florida statutes from the 1800s, Chandler and Parker are breaking a law against unmarried cohabitation. It's punishable by a $500 fine or 60 days in jail. However, they've got lots of company. 2010 census data shows there's around 600,000 unmarried couples living under the same roof in Florida. That's why Weston Democratic Representative Richard Stark says it's time for repeal. The first-term House member argues the archaic statute can easily be abused, and he says it isn't the only one.
There is a law in Florida. It uses the term alien in it, but basically the outcome of the law is that people from Asia cannot own property in the state of Florida.
That example is actually in the state constitution. planted within a provision that lays out Floridians' unalienable rights. The section states that aliens are exempt from the right to own property. When the provision was crafted, alien was a code word for Asian Americans, who at the time were ineligible for U.S. citizenship. Stark's attempt to spotlight legislative relics isn't the first time a lawmaker has pushed for a repeal of an antiquated statute. Melbourne Republican Representative Rich Workman tried his hand at repealing a swath of statutes, including the cohabitation law in 2011, but failed after social conservatives in his own party objected. Before that, a voter-led push to repeal the property ban collapsed in 2001 after conservative groups lambasted the effort as an opening for illegal immigrants to secure property rights. Florida State University political scientist Lance DeHaven-Smith says difficulty repealing old statutes isn't uncommon.
It's a fight about something that that people don't even understand well, and it's, you know, based on confusion and prejudices. But that's pretty common in politics. It's unfortunate, but I think it's a credit to the American people that they have to be misled. The sad thing is it's so easy.
Just because the laws are on the books doesn't mean they'll be used, though. Baylor Johnson, a spokesman for the American Civil Liberties Union's Florida chapter, says if someone were to be prosecuted under a law like Florida's cohabitation ban, the suit would be challenged and ultimately thrown out.
Seems unlikely that the law would stand. For the government to be involving itself in people's personal relationships in this way through the criminal code would likely be found to be an invasion of privacy and wouldn't stand a challenge.
Numerous calls to the Florida Family Policy Council, a group that opposed repealing cohabitation laws in 2011, were not returned. But legislative opponents say it's a morality issue. When some lawmakers first heard of Workman's repeal, they argued it would discourage people from marrying. But Johnson asserts if that were true, Florida wouldn't have such a high divorce rate. Scott Chandler and Matilda Parker agree.
I think the fact that almost nobody knows that this law was on the books in the first place means that it has no effect whatsoever on my plans for getting married. And knowing that it is on the books now, cohabitating before getting married doesn't seem like a bad idea, and it doesn't discourage me from getting married.
I feel like that's a normal step in a relationship, is moving in together before marriage.
Representative Stark isn't confident his colleagues will pass his repeal bill, but says passing the measure isn't necessarily his goal. He wants lawmakers to take a second or third look at unenforceable statutes. Meanwhile, Parker and Chandler say they don't have any immediate plans for marriage. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Bank.
Join the conversation. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. Still to come on Capitol Report, Senate Republicans select Andy Gardner this week as that chamber's next president.
And with a strong backbone, a warm heart, uncommon sense, and an optimism as warm as the central Florida sunshine.
Some lawmakers say Florida high school students need a crash course in financial literacy to help them make better decisions, like how much to take out in student loans or whether it's smart to spend the extra money for a fast food lunch rather than what they get in the cafeteria.
Yeah, but it's worth it.
And Florida isn't only concerned about voters having proper identification. A proposal that would provide free IDs to inmates upon their release from prison has some concern with one of its provisions.
That says if an inmate refuses to be cooperative, I guess, then they're going to be subject to disciplinary action. And I thought, well, that doesn't make any sense.
Florida's 2014 legislative session is still 2.5 months away, but this week the majority Republican caucus officially chose who will be Senate president after next fall's elections. As Jessica Palumbo reports, 44-year-old Orlando Republican Andy Gardner says he's planning to focus on improving the economy, conserving natural resources, and reforming education.
Gardner has served a combined 13 years in the Florida legislature, including time in both the Senate and House. Speaking at his designation ceremony, Fort Myers Senator Lisbeth Beniquisto said all Republicans should aspire to be as compassionate as Gardner is.
Since the first day we met you, you have been exactly the same person. someone who is uniquely focused on making sure that you are inclusive of all attitudes and abilities and viewpoints.
Gardner has a young son with Down syndrome, and he's known for pushing legislation aimed at helping people with disabilities. Last year, he sponsored a law requiring parents of special needs children to give final approval of their child's education plan. That decision used to be up to the schools.
This is something good for people in general, good for these students. I'm just happy that somebody had the you-know-what to be able to do it.
That's Pembroke Pines education blogger Armand Colson, whose own daughter has a severe learning disability. He says the law Gardner got passed will provide more students the chance to succeed because it forces their parents to get involved and gives them the chance to insist on more challenging classes when necessary.
And my daughter was lucky. She literally was lucky. She's doing extremely well. Extremely well. But I've seen so many in her class, and you get to know all of these kids as you grow up, as they grow up. I've seen so many in her class who just didn't progress at all.
Colson, who identifies himself as an independent voter, says what he knows of Gardner leads him to believe the future Senate president doesn't put politics first.
I just think he looks at individual issues and say, how is this going to help or not help?
Republican Senator David Simmons spoke during the ceremony, saying he and Gardner have become good friends since they were freshman representatives in 2000.
Senator Gardner has the vision we need. He has the vision to make Florida an even better state.
Gardner then laid out a few specifics of that vision. His first priority is to improve the business climate, he says, with targeted tax incentives and better zoning. His second priority is to use the state's projected budget surplus to address issues with natural resources, especially water. And in that vision, he says ecotourism would follow.
We're all known for our theme parks, but we should be known for our rivers and our lakes and our bike trails all across this great state.
Finally, Gardner says he'd like the elimination of the special diploma and more support for college programs focused on training for specific trades. He also acknowledged he'll be president of the entire Senate, not just of the Republicans who selected him, and then addressed future Democratic minority leader Arthenia Joyner.
The journey that you and I will embark upon the next couple of years, we will be arm in arm, and I will do everything I can to help each member of your caucus be successful in doing what's best for the Florida Senate and for the state.
Joyner says over the past 13 years, she's come to know Gardner as someone who's strong in his views, but never condescending to those who disagree with him.
I'm sure that we'll be able to work together amicably, because that's what happens when you have a leader who respects the opposition, and he does.
Joyner stopped short of saying how her priorities might differ from Gardner's. She says she's just focused on this session's Democratic agenda of civil rights legislation. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Okay, here's a Capital Report pop quiz. Under which of the following circumstances would it be financially beneficial to you to borrow money to buy something now and repay it with future income? A, when some clothes you like go on sale. B, when the interest on the loan is greater than the interest you get on your savings. Or C, when you need a car to get a much better paying job. Well, according to NPR's financial literacy quiz, the answer's C. If getting the car means a much better paying job, you should be able to easily pay back the loan and save. Maybe that seems like an easy question to you, but Regan McCarthy reports a group of lawmakers say it'll be a tough one for Florida's high school and college students. That's why they're pushing for a measure that would require kids to take a standalone financial literacy class in order to graduate.
You like cheese on that burger?
Lawmakers say when it comes to money, most students don't have the knowledge they need. Consider Leon High School junior, Trace Hunter. Hunter leaves school to get lunch with friends at Whataburger instead of eating in the school cafeteria. Hunter says it costs more, but he thinks it's worth it.
I don't really like the school lunch, and it's the same thing every day.
But Hunter says he and his friends aren't all that concerned about cost.
Most of our money is our parents, so we don't really try as hard to spend it wisely.
Hunter says once he graduates, he'll pay more attention to his money management. But Port Orange Republican Senator Dorothy Hugel says Florida's students are having a tougher time at making that transition than Hunter suggests.
Seniors or high schoolers are not aware of how to prepare for, to save for tuition, for college, if they want to go to college, if they want to go to vocational school. They're not really aware of what they're paying in interest rates. And even before they graduate from college, they're going to be faced with people offering them bank accounts, debit cards, credit cards.
Hugel says she remembers learning some of that information through trial and error. But she says for today's student, the stakes can be much higher.
Students are graduating now with more school loans than ever. It's become almost a crisis nationwide. It's over $1 trillion at this point.
Hugel says that's why she's authoring a bill that would require high school students to take a financial literacy class before they graduate high school. The exact curriculum for the class hasn't been worked out yet, but Flagler College Associate Director of Financial Aid, Shia Pleasant-Doyne, says from her perspective, whatever a school can teach would help.
We do a considerable amount of financial literacy outreach here at the college, but by the time that students are coming to us, not that it's too late, but it would certainly be beneficial to the students and their families if they got this information at a much younger age.
Pleasant-Doyne says while recent economic hardships have made some students more cautious about going into debt, others aren't savvy enough to wisely accept and spend student loans.
When you're young and you're inexperienced with managing money and you get a lot of money at once, it's very tempting to misspend it. And so it is helpful to have that credit understanding and money management skills so where they understand that this is a loan, you're going to have to pay it back with interest, and you really need to be careful about what you're borrowing for and how you're using that money.
Pleasant-Doyne says the earlier students can start learning that, the better. She says she'd like to see money management lessons start as early as elementary school. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Florida lawmakers are reconsidering a legislative effort that failed last year. It's aimed at reducing the chances of former inmates coming back into the state's prison system. But as Sasha Cordner reports, while most consider getting ex-inmates on the path to getting a job and a house a good thing, others say some parts of the bill still need more work.
As the state entertains reentry initiatives aimed at reducing what's called recidivism, or the number of former inmates coming back to prison, a big goal of the Florida Department of Corrections is the Identification Card Project. When Florida inmates get to prison, they are issued an ID card, but it's not really accepted outside the prison walls. And if any inmate has an ID on them when they get locked up, like a driver's license or Social Security card, it's returned upon their release. But according to the department, many inmates do not bring an ID with them when they enter prison. Then by the time they get out, it's either lost or expired, and they need to get something new. And Florida Public Defender Bob Dillinger with the Sixth Circuit says there are many obstacles in inmates' way.
Just to show you an idea of the problems that we run into, but we used to go to Social Security and get a printout that would establish that the person had done some kind of work or had a Social Security history. We would take that then to DMV, who would issue the ID card with the birth certificate. Based on that, we go back to Social Security, and they would give us an actual Social Security card.
But Dillinger says that whole process recently changed. That made it more difficult for an inmate to get an ID, which is needed to get a job or a house.
About 2 months ago, Social Security decided that they would not give us that little printout without an ID. We go to DMV and they say without the Social Security printout, we can't give you an ID. I mean, it's the true government catch-22. We found some ways to work around that, but that's a big impact on poor people. We have to get them an ID.
That's why Dillinger says he supports a bill brought forth by Altamont Springs Republican Senator David Simmons in the Senate Criminal Justice Committee this past Monday. The bill allows the corrections agency to work with the state's health department and Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles to ensure every ex-inmate has an ID card and a copy of their birth certificate free of charge. Simmons' bill also directs the Florida Department of Corrections to continue its faith in character-based institutions. It also mandates all 17 institutions offer Alcoholics Anonymous and literacy training. The bill has the support of the Florida Chamber of Commerce, the Florida Public Defenders Association, as well as the Florida Alcohol and Drug Abuse Association. There is also a group of business leaders that look to find cost-effective ways to improve public safety, the Florida Smart Justice Alliance. Its president and CEO is Barney Bishop, and his group last year helped put a similar bill together that included creating a reentry facility and asking the Department of Corrections to create incentives so private providers will want to participate. The bill got watered down several times, at times even pitting Republicans against one another, and later got tied up in the committee process. And Bishop says his goal is still the same, rehabilitation for Florida inmates, which he estimates could save the state tens of millions of dollars. But not everyone's on board with the total bill. The measure contains a provision that the department must get all the necessary materials from inmates in order to obtain a birth certificate, including a photo. But if the inmate fails to cooperate, it, quote, may result in disciplinary action. That didn't sit well with Jacksonville Democratic Senator Audrey Gibson. Simmons says he'd be willing to work with Gibson to, quote, tweak that language, but Bishop says it may not be needed.
Senator Gibson, to go to your question, first off, the language says the department may do disciplinary action, so they don't have to. And if somebody resists it for some good reason, I'm sure the department's common sense is going to come through and they'll do the right thing.
Despite her reservations, Gibson, along with five other senators, passed the bill unanimously. Still, Gibson says that part of the bill doesn't make any sense. And speaking to her fellow Democratic colleagues at a caucus meeting, she says she wants to work with the Department of Corrections and Senator Simmons
to turn it into something positive so that cooperation would, you know, be much more forthcoming. Because I asked, what does the disciplinary action look like? What is that? You are going to keep somebody longer because they don't want to cooperate? That's just ridiculous. Obviously, they must anticipate an issue, otherwise they wouldn't have put it in the bill, but I think we need to deal with it in a different way.
Gibson says Senator Simmons' commitment to tweak that language is what swayed her to vote for the bill. She hopes to have that done before its next stop, the Senate Judiciary Committee. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Bank, Sasha Kordner, Lynn Hatter, Stan Jastrzebski, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Ken Smith, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: The Able Trust, committed to helping high school students with disabilities graduate and advance to jobs, post-secondary education, and a bright future. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. On the web at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.